Anomalisa, the Oscar-nominated animated film set in Cincinnati, was created by Academy Award winner Charlie Kaufman and director Duke Johnson. The stop-action film, now playing at the Esquire, tells the story of a miserable, cynical author named Michael Stone, who comes to Cincinnati to address a customer service conference. In his world, everyone looks and sounds the same, except a young woman from Akron named Lisa. She's an anomaly, Anomalisa. The stop-action technique using puppets took 3 years to make after being funded through Kickstarter, the online crowdfunding site. Kaufman won an Oscar in 2005 for his original screenplay, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which starred Jim Carrey. Kaufman also wrote Anomalisa and directed with Johnson. Joining us by phone today are the co-directors.
Let me start with you, Charlie. Is it true you wrote this screenplay like 10 years ago?
I wrote it as a staged radio play, and it was performed in 2005 with the same cast.
And then did you readapt it for a screenplay? Tell about how you got from there to here today.
A friend of mine was in the audience when we did it in 2005, a guy named Dino Stamatopoulos, who is a writer who I worked with on the Dana Carvey Show. And he really liked this play. And over the years, he founded an animation studio called Starburns Industries, where Duke is a director. And they were looking for something to do in late 2011. And they had a copy of the script if they could make it into a stop motion animation. And I said that they could, if they could raise the money, that would be fine. I had no ambitions for this thing other than what it was, which was performed twice before a live audience.
Charlie, did you have to change it, tweak it, readapt it at all to become a film from what it was originally?
There were some changes that we had to make because we couldn't get the rights to certain things. The Millennium Hotel was the original place where Michael was staying, and the Millennium didn't want to allow us to use their name. So we changed that, and we couldn't get the rights to the film clip of Casablanca that Michael watches on TV. We changed that to My Man Godfrey, and we changed the song from My Heart Will Go On to Girls Just Want to Have Fun for the same reason. And other than that, the big change in the piece is adding all of the visuals, which is an enormous change because it was completely non-visual. It was just people reading on stage with musicians and a Foley artist. So Duke and I had to construct this world and this reality, and any kind of visual gags that aren't referred to in dialogue were added. But the dialogue, aside from the small changes I mentioned, is almost exactly the same as it was.
I thought the detail was amazing. And Duke, can you talk a little bit about the stop animation, the stop action process? And I think I read somewhere that they were like filming on 18 sets or 18 sets in a day.
Yeah, we had 18 stages. So it's a big warehouse, and it's divided into separate stages by black curtains. And each stage has its own set piece. The whole production is 1/6 scale. So the puppets are Michael's 12 inches, which is the equivalent of 6 feet in that world. And the sets are proportionate. Each stage has an animator, and they're animating at approximately 2 seconds of animation per animator per day. So we got about a minute of animation a week.
So what was the biggest challenge?
Hard to say what the biggest challenge was. I mean, it was all pretty challenging. There's technical challenges to achieve the animation on our limited budget. Furthermore, just budget in general being very limited financially was a challenge. We almost had to shut down a couple of times, just struggling to get the money to finish the film. Obviously, there was an immense challenge to figure out how to articulate the emotional experience of the story, or the emotional experience of the characters, rather, in the story, making those choices and figuring out what it is exactly.
Duke, one more quick follow-up question. So if there was like 18 stages and all the animators, how many people did it take to do this?
It fluctuated because it was over the process of multiple years. Over 100 people, I want to say maybe 150 people altogether over the course of 3 years, but maybe at max 80 people at one time.
Charlie, I want you to tell me a little bit about this fellow, Michael Stone. Reviewers have called him like miserable or bored or cynical, detached, depressed. What's your best description of him?
He's a person who can't find a way to interact with other people and connect with other people.
Was this character or this story kicking around in your head for a long time before you sat down and wrote it?
No, I wrote it pretty quickly. I had been part of an evening of these sound plays that I described to you, and the other was done by the Coen brothers, and we were going to perform in Los Angeles, and they weren't available to make the trip to Los Angeles, so we wanted to go anyway, but we needed a second play to replace theirs. So I wrote a second play for the evening, and that was Anomalisa. There was a lot of pressure at the time because we were scheduled to do this other thing, and I needed to write it, get the actors together. Carter Burwell needed to write the score, rehearse with his musicians. I needed to rehearse with the actors and get it to Los Angeles. So it was a good experience. It was fun and exciting, but it was pretty quick.
Nothing like deadline pressure, right?
Exactly.
How long did it take to write?
No idea. I don't know the answer to that. I can't remember. It was 2005. It was in the swirl of activity. It was much shorter than other scripts that I've written, some of which have taken a few years. It was a very different type of thing. It was more streamlined. It was simpler by necessity in terms of its construction because it had to work as a non-visual radio play. So we had some kind of constrictions in what we could do without confusing people. Even as with what it was, it seemed like it could have confused people. It didn't at the time. People seemed to respond to it, but it was a little bit of a stylistic departure from what these things usually are.
You're on the air here at WVXU, Cincinnati Public Radio. I've got to ask, why Cincinnati?
Another question that I get asked, usually by people from Cincinnati, or maybe always by people from Cincinnati in the Q&As that we do, I don't really know that I have a very good reason. And again, it was in 2005, and it's a little bit blurry for me to try to recall. I wanted it to be in that part of the country. I like the way the word Cincinnati sounds. I did a little reading online about Cincinnati and found out about the famous chili and about the zoo, and I thought that was kind of fun stuff to write about. I've never been to Cincinnati in real life, so I don't have any experience or feelings about it in any way.
Duke, you grew up in St. Louis. Have you ever made it this far?
No, I've never actually been to Cincinnati.
I've been to Ohio, and I lived in Wisconsin, and I lived in Minnesota, so I've been in the Midwest. I was there for probably 6 years, so there's no anti-Midwest agenda or anything in my...
I think I've driven through, actually.
So, Charlie, you're not saying we're a bunch of boring people who look alike and sound alike here?
Not at all. And you may be because I have never been there, so I have no way of knowing. But
that's true.
If you look at how Anomalisa plays out, he also has that experience with his wife and son in Los Angeles and everybody else at the party in Los Angeles. So it's not at all about Cincinnati. It was a place to place it. I felt like that part of the country was a place for Lisa to live. It felt right for Lisa to be from there. She's from Akron, but from that part of the country, it felt good. So I think that was probably the primary reason I set it in Ohio.
You're each a director of this. This is a question for each of you. How did you divide the work or share the work, or how did it work as both being a director?
We pretty much did everything together, actually. The animation process is very front-loaded, so you figure out everything in advance as much as possible. We did the voice records, recorded all the actors together, and then we edited an animatic, which is like a blueprint for the film that's edited to time with storyboards and temp audio and all of the actual voice records. And we worked out all the staging and the blocking and the emotional beats of the characters and all the creative direction with the character designers and the costume designers and the production designers. And we just answered all those questions and figured that all out together. A lot of conversation. And because of the pace of animation, how it moves slower than live action, when problems arise, there's times to have discussions about it and come to a mutual conclusion.
Duke, when did you first meet Charlie? Was it through the animation studio that Charlie talked about earlier?
Yeah, we have a mutual friend, Dino Stamatopoulos, that I think Charlie was telling you about, that started the studio where I work at, and Charlie it worked with in the past as well. And so Dino had the script and brought it to me and reached out to Charlie and brought us together.
Charlie, when they first said, hey, we think we could make a movie of this, what was your first impression? Was it, yeah, I could see that, or was it, well, I don't know, or what?
I had multiple impressions. I think my first concern was that I had written it to be this very specific non-visual thing in which there was a lot of ambiguity about what the imagery was. And so it allowed for the audience to create it in their minds and have different interpretations of it. And that would have to be thrown away when we made everything concrete. I was in a place in my career where I was having difficulty getting things made. So I thought, well, let's see if they can raise the money, and if they can, let's try to do it. It was just one more thing I was trying to do. I wasn't really expecting it to happen. It seemed unlikely to me based on the experiences I was having trying to get things made, and this was going to be made completely outside of any kind of system. So I don't have any negative response to stop motion animation. In fact, I like it very much, and I did at the time as well. So it wasn't an issue that I don't want to do this in stop motion. It was, well, what is it going to be if we throw away that idea that you can't see this thing, and it has to be replaced with something that's of equal value for it to be good? That was my opinion. But they were able to raise the money with Kickstarter, at least to get us started, and then Duke and I started working on it, and we found what it was going to look like and what it was going to be as we were making it.
Was there just one Kickstarter campaign, or did you have to do a series of several to fund the different stages?
We just did the one campaign, and we got $400,000. That got us started, and then through the Kickstarter, we got the attention of a man named Keith Calder and his company, Snoot Entertainment, that they came on board to finance the rest of the film.
Well, Charlie Duke, I thank you for joining us today. I'll invite you to Cincinnati. I'll even take you to the zoo.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Is it zoo-sized?
The zoo's a wonderful place. Anomalisa is nominated for Best Animated Film at the 88th Annual Academy Awards, to be broadcast February 28th on ABC. The movie opened Thursday at the Esquire Theater in Clifton. I'd like to thank my guests, the co-directors of Anomalisa, Charlie Kaufman and Duke Johnson. You'll find a link at our website, WVXU.org. For Around Cincinnati, I'm John Kiesel.
Remember, there is someone out there for everyone.
I think you're extraordinary.
Why?
I don't know yet. It's just obvious to me that you are.
Our time is limited, we forget that.
Sorry, I grabbed your hand.
It's okay.
It's a reflex, but I don't like to fly.
I said it's okay. Can let go now, though.